Technology is driving change in the warehouse industry. And with it comes a range of benefits, from increased efficiency to cost savings. And in this episode of What the Tech, we'll actually discuss how robotic warehouse management systems are really revolutionizing the way warehouses operate all around the world. We'll look at how companies like Tryon Solutions have actually used advanced technology and robots for cost savings, as well as the challenges and potential issues of using humanoid robots. We'll also explore strategies for staying ahead of competitors, such as incorporating advanced warehouse management systems and reassuring teams about the jobs of the future. So I hope you'll join us as we learn more about how robotics is actually transforming the warehouse industry. Let's go. I'm excited to introduce my special guest today, a true digital transformation expert with over 18 years of experience across the globe, specializing in ERP and warehouse management software. He's actually handled pre-sales and implementation for the largest textile companies in the world, actually helping one of them grow from a handful of locations to nearly 100. And today he actually works for Tryon Solutions as a technical demonstrator, sales operations, and much more. I'm actually very pleased to welcome my next guest, James Pryor. Thanks for coming on the show with me today, James.
Yeah, thank you. This is an awesome podcast, so appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Is that because the check was in the mail, or you mean that?
Well, those compromising photos you have of me, I'm worried about them getting out in the public and it might affect my run for governor or whatever in the future.
It does help. It does help. Okay. Well, good. This is going to be a fun conversation. Obviously I had Kelly Little on here before and she did a fantastic job. So I have very high expectations for you and I'm sure she does as well.
she actually redefined my opinion of what HR people do. That's how good she is. She came in here. That was nothing. Nothing.
Yeah.
We had a string of HR people just come in and out. And then she came in here and just crushed it. Expanded the role into what it should be. Oh man, she's great. Yeah. And just so yes, tough act to follow.
Yeah, 100%. But I'm sure you'll hold your own. So let's go with
hopefully.
That.
Hopefully.
So I've been pumped about this talk because I geek out about things like robots, and this is something that you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. But before we jump into the full plate of the topic, I wanted to ask you a few questions that I think are a little bit quirky and funny.
Yep.
Specifically around, I heard a story, and it might have been from you, that somebody named James used to actually do some gardening with a samurai sword. Is that true?
I still occasionally do. A couple of years ago, I was cleaning out my parents' place, and I found this old rusty samurai sword that I got back in the 80s from some sketchy mail order catalog. I'd forgotten about it. This thing rusted, but the blade's relatively sharp on it. And so, go out there, trim the hedges with it. It's entertaining for myself. Sometimes there'll be a very formal bow, and then I'll just, but anyway, yeah. So I do that occasionally. Yeah.
That's great. I could just picture that in my mind, you out there doing that, especially with the handlebar mustache that I actually found on your IMDb.
Oh yeah,
page.
I did a little voice acting, and then I was an extra in a movie that's been long delayed, Kung Fury 2. It's been long delayed, but it'll eventually come out. That was from on. I'm not supposed to say on set. I wasn't supposed to release any. Anyway, it's in the wardrobe, and yeah, that's a fake mustache. I can't grow.
Is it really?
I mean, that is incredible. I wish I could grow something like that. But
the whole hairdo and the mustache. And by the way, I'm going to put it on the show here so that everybody gets to see it. We're talking about it. But that is a fantastic look for you. I'm like, why do you not do that? Maybe it's because you can't grow a mustache. I don't know.
Not to that level. That is, that's almost Sam Elliott. It's like Sam Elliott's here, maybe Magnum PI is here. It's in that range. It's unbelievable. And but yeah, I goof off a little, I had not serious acting, obviously, but yeah, a little goof off and I have a little fun and yeah, it's cool.
I love it. Not everybody can say that. And I saw that on your LinkedIn page and I was like, oh, we got to bring this up. I mean,
I have it off to the right. So you scrolled over to the right. Okay.
I did.
You did research.
I went looking for it.
You had to actually look for that. That's cool.
Yeah. Well, it was off the beaten path, but I found it. Yeah. So that's, I mean, that's the goal, right? I always have something funny that somebody is willing to share with me that we talk about. So I appreciate you doing that with me. That was fun.
Sure. Yeah, man.
Well, good. Let's talk about robots and how warehouse management is changing. And I think, you know, it's not the premise of everything going on in your industry is robots, but there's definitely, kind of some movement towards, you know, how can we use different systems to create efficiency in and around your industry? Software has been doing it for a long time, right? But robots is kind of like the new frontier of what that looks like, these autonomous robots. And so, you know, I want to talk about what are the current challenges that are happening in the industry that we're seeing that this type of solution is creating viable opportunities for organizations to save money, to create efficiency, to eliminate potentially risk in some areas. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, right now, you know, warehouses are, I mean, there's this absolute cutthroat competition. I mean, if you have a small niche warehouse and a small product that nobody else has, okay, maybe you can get away with it, right? But if you're a small, medium-sized warehouse distribution center, you know, to compete these days, you know, you need, at its core, you need some kind of warehouse management. That's what Triumph Solutions does. We do professional services for warehouse management. We also do things in and around warehouse management software, like robots. We work with a company called Locus Robotics, which we'll get into. But it's, you know, if you have a competitors that are, you know, running at the highest efficiencies and the lowest cost because of all these systems they have implemented, you have to do it too. I mean, it's not an optional thing anymore. It's not a nice to have. It's a must have. And, you know, imagine like for a WMS, you know, new stock arrives at a warehouse. A human being can't determine the best place to store it, right? WMS knows right away. It's got instant access to your past and current inventory, and as well as possible storage locations, like where it should go. And just imagine, like, you know, a customer sends an order, and the WMS instantly checks to see if that product's available. Think about it: if a customer sends an order, and a human being has to go out and verify against, you know, the available stock. Now, there's inventory management systems that kind of do that, but a warehouse management system is really a serious, it's a more serious, inventory management is here, warehouse management system is here. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, throughout all these, well, it's sort of guiding inventory through receiving, through what's called put away, and then picking, and then outbound. You get visibility, important visibility throughout all these processes. So you know what inventory you have, so you know what you need, so you can forecast, know what to purchase. And, you know, inventory counting, like preventing loss and things like this, like it's really, really important. And you can have all the great robots and automation in the world, but at your core, if you don't have something like this, you're just not going to succeed. And you also need a warehouse management system to house the data to send to those robots. You know, like the robots need that information. So you have to have this before you can really get robots.
Right. So you say that the warehouse management system is like the foundation to a house, right?
I believe it. Yeah.
Yeah. So without having a good foundation for the software and reconciliation and all of that input in one place, none of this other stuff even makes any sense. Like you could have a robot, you know, it doesn't know where to go, doesn't know what to do. It's like a rogue employee, right?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, there's other systems like transportation management system, which does like freight optimization and route optimization. And there's also warehouse labor management systems, which can help coach. You can use that for coaching. But the WMS it's like a must have, you know. These other ones, it could make sense for you, right? Like if you have, you know, a lot of trucks, a fleet of trucks, you may have a TMS, things like that. But yeah, it's the foundation. I agree with that. Completely. And yeah, like you have to tell, you know, you've got to be able to tell the robot where the inventory is. And, you know, it's a lot easier than if a human being is punching. It almost takes away from the advantage of the robot. A human being is manually telling the robot that, right?
Right. Yeah. Come back here and get directions when you get back.
Yeah.
Right. I might be using the restroom. Right. Who knows? But hit me up.
Yeah.
So what are some of the companies doing? I mean, are there arguably companies in the warehouse distribution arena that don't have WMSs, or are they just under-resourced? Like the platform that they've got doesn't have enough horsepower.
So that's a good question. So the we have seen some companies come to us with a very niche product, and they don't quite feel the stress that some other, because nobody else is providing what they provide.
Right.
So they can kind of get away with it, but even they have something, you know, some bare bones, you know, some bare bones tool. But you know, we get other companies that come to us. They started off small, right? And then they got, you know, Joe Bob's pocket warehouse app, right? And, you know, Joe Bob's was good at the time, but when they scale, when they grow, you can't run Joe Bob's when you're decent size, when you're, you know, medium to large size. You've got to get something serious, you know, that provides serious visibility in your operation and, you know, is what we call like an enterprise grade. We call them tier one. There's also tier two WMSs. Those are fine too, but enterprise grade, like tier one WMS. And you also sometimes get, like we had we talked to a furniture maker, I guess about a year ago. They got like furniture making specific warehouse management system, and that couldn't scale either, just because it's, you know, these are small software houses that make these industry specific solutions and make these, again, Joe Bob solutions. And it's just, they don't have the development team, they don't have the money. And so when you get up to the tier one, you've got the company we work with, Blue Yonder. They make a, you know, serious warehouse management systems where you've got, you know, Fortune 50 companies using it, and you know, and it can handle ridiculous amounts of throughput.
Question for you: what do you feel like? Hey, I'm not in a place where I don't have anything, right? Most people have something, like whether it's a warehouse management system to the extent of Blue Yonder or something that's more capable or not, they've got something in place. What are they missing out on when they're not taking advantage of, you know, a platform to the extent that maybe has capabilities to add robots or capabilities to do, I don't know, is there integration ability via yeah. API with yes. transportation systems and things yes. like that? Like, let's talk about some of those things that they're missing out on and what the ROI might be if they were to take advantage of those.
Sure. Yeah, and we can get into robots too, of course. On the warehouse management side, you know, like I said, it houses a lot of important data that would go to other systems. And yeah, API is one channel that it would use to do that. But I mean, you'd be missing out on, yeah, a lot of the latest and greatest technology that your competitors are using. It's a cutthroat marketplace these days. I don't even know how you can do, you know, people do an omni-channel distribution. How can you do that without, you know, some kind of serious system in place? Mm-hmm. So yeah, feeding automation systems, even just from a standpoint of like knowing where you can improve, like you can actually look and see, oh, we need to improve this, improve that. If everything's done by pencil or Excel spreadsheet, I mean, you don't know, you know, how and where you can improve. I would say, you know, if you have a lot of customers, if you have one customer, and again, a niche product, okay, but if you've got a lot of customers, they have customer compliance requirements. Oh, we need this label shipped for these products. Oh, we need a box with this dimensions to go to this. How do you keep track of all of the various customer compliance mm-hmm. without a real deal warehouse management system? And so that's a big one. I mean, the customers can even demand it. They can say, like, look, we're tired of the hand. Well, okay, probably nobody's doing a handwritten label, but that's extreme. But, you know, we don't want ramshackle stuff. We want all the information packaged nicely, data, you know, and so that's a huge one. Mm-hmm. And certainly picking errors in the warehouse. you know, how can you, excuse me, how can you accurately manage that and even know, like, oh, we're making mistakes and we're, you know, we have issues that we need to clear up. So, I mean, definitely be a huge reduction in like in errors. Yeah, I mean, like I said, forecasting. These are the big ones. These are the big things that you're missing out on. And yeah, your medium size or larger, you're just going to be left behind. And you don't have a WMS.
It's interesting you say that. So I go back about 30 years kind of thinking about this. My grandfather owned an appliance warehouse. And, you know, they sold new appliances and all the parts to go with those new appliances. And they sold them to other appliance, you know, repair places, right? On top of, they had their own technician team and they would do repairs themselves. And I just remember my grandfather was actually awarded, he was in the military, 25 years in the Army, and he was actually awarded several different things for actually creating the catalog system for medical
medical device
stuff. And so they use this system for like 30, 40 years, you know, in total, to basically identify parts for medical devices, you know, so that they could ship them to different parts of the world so that, you know, they had an actual system for doing this so that they could speed up the time for specialized parts and these systems that were breaking down. And so he used very, very much that similar system inside of his business and the appliance business. Now, I didn't know it at the time, but he was very organized. But there's nothing, you know, from a technology standpoint, when I was in there, that was really keeping track of all that stuff. They were in these large, you know, binders of information. I just remember there was a number for everything, right? And so what you're talking about is a digital version of this, right? That knows exactly what spaces are open, where everything specifically goes, right? Without the giant binders that you have to flip through and find it, right? So think about the efficiency there. So I'm curious, you know, based on kind of where that started, you know, where things are today, how big of a gap is there of what typically organizations are using in and around warehouse management systems and what is actually available today? How big is that gap?
Between what the average warehouse is using? I mean, if you're a giant Fortune 50, you're not much of a gap, right?
Right.
But these other companies, I was at one yesterday. I'm pre-sales, and I was with a frontline sales person and one of our delivery people at a company yesterday. And they had that semi-niche, not fully niche, but semi-niche. Like they've been crushing it, you know, but they've been doubling in growth every year, literally doubling in growth. And they had, I won't say the name, but it was maybe slightly better than Joe Bob's WMS. It was a little better, but still it was pretty bad. And they were doing a lot of manual stuff, even though they have a quote-unquote WMS. There's a big gap. Even though they're making crazy money, even though they're doing really well, there's a big gap. And I mean, actually, they did a pretty good job managing what they're, you know, but that's because they're all smart, they're all hardworking, and they probably are overstaffed. They probably are paying a lot in labor and wasting a lot of time. But they're so far they're keeping up. But they've got to get a serious WMS now because you just can't continue to grow, especially in the existing, you know, footprint of their warehouses. They're busting at the seams, and it's not efficient when, you know, inventory comes in and it's like the driver just, well, stick it here, and then they stick it wherever, you know, and you can't do that. So, you know, so we definitely see a lot of those instances, a lot of those cases.
Right. So I guess fast forward to, you know, the direction that we're going. I know we kind of kicked off the conversation talking a little bit about robots and, you know, things like that. It's not the future anymore. It's really reality. It's what kind of applications, because they're not necessarily humanoid type robots. They're almost like little forklifts a lot of times that are kind of going from point A to point B, but they know exactly where to go. They're efficient. Talk a little bit about kind of that. What direction are we going there, and what implementation have you already seen with this and potentially some stories of ROI?
Sure. and you, and it's a great point. Most of them aren't humanoid, although we were at ProMat, which was a huge, it's a huge supply chain conference that happened to be in Chicago. They have them every year. Next year it's called MODEX. They have that in Atlanta. But I did see a humanoid robot, and I was like, wait, because like you said, it doesn't really make sense, you know, unless you try to scare people. You know, like, what's the point of a humanoid? Because humans aren't really efficient for, you know, right. So I talked to them and I was like, why are you doing this? What is the point? So, and it made sense. A human could technically, except for like, you know, way high up on a rack system or something, could perform any kind of duty. So the idea is for small, medium-sized warehouses to have a humanoid robot that can actually perform any operation instead of being specifically tailored for one type of thing. So there's actually, it's my first time I've seen a humanoid robot in the warehouse, you know, in the warehouse realm. I'd seen him in those, you know, crazy videos where they beat up robots or whatever, disturbing videos. But anyway, we work with, and I don't think, I wouldn't say that, you know, robotics in the supply chain realm is quite ready for an entirely AI controlled warehouse, and then the warehouse manager stands there and is like, "You have conquered logistics," and is sipping champagne or whatever. I think it's, I think what we're seeing realistically is intensive stuff like lugging, like for example, picking, where you have inventory items on some aisles, okay, and then you're taking that and you're bringing it over to be packed up and shipped, or what's called put away, when you receive items and then you take them over to be stored as inventory. This type of thing, the only information, it's not that complex. It's just these inventory items, this number of inventory items goes here. And then on the other side, when it's outbound, it's, you know, get these inventory items for the order and then bring them over to be packed. So, and then people, you know, you sometimes hear people are worried about like robots taking jobs and stuff. You know, these are things that you don't really want people doing in 2023, lugging heavy things. Like, they're, human beings can be doing better stuff, right? More interesting, you know, just better things than just simple. And it's rough on the joints. They go home with, you know, no energy to kind of be with their family type of thing. And there's also labor shortages in the warehouse space too. And so this helps with that. So we've seen, we work with a company called Logos Robotics. And I saw on site at a company that had the picking Locus picker robots. I'm going to use this not to scale example.
Okay.
So little cartons, right? And basically the packer would put the boxes on the bot, and a barcode with the bot to tell it like what items to get and where to go. The bot hustles over, and it also avoids people. While it's doing that, it avoids it. I tried to shake and bake with one. Really, I was like, you know, trying to shake and bake, not as well as you could, but I did all right. No, it avoided me completely. It just stopped and avoided me, and it also would avoid forklifts and stuff. And so it'll go over and just hang out at the where it's supposed to, where the inventory is actually located. You know, it'll hang out, and then when a picker comes over, a human being comes over wearing a little Bluetooth identifier badge, so the bot knows who's doing the picking, they'll put the inventory for that order and put them in the boxes, and then the bot goes back to the person that's packing it, and then, you know, they box it up and send out the order. And so That heavy intensive process between the packing station, between where the inventory item is located, you don't necessarily need a human being to do that. So this is, and you don't have to change your warehouse footprint or layout. It's like you just bring them in. And in this case with Locus, they do robots as a service, they call it. And this way you can handle like seasonal demands and things like that. And that's probably the best way to do it, rather than, you know, you buy a bunch of robots and they could become outdated maybe, or they're just sitting in a dusty corner or whatever, you know. But so that's where it's at now, is you have a lot of companies, the things that human beings don't necessarily want to do and the things that are kind of more labor intensive, you have robots doing that. Now, there's some places you can go into. They've got drones counting inventory. That's not really the standard, I don't think. You have that, you know, reading barcodes and reading, but I don't think that's commonplace. Well, unlike what I'm saying now, I think that's the first step for robots sort of taking over warehouses is this way, is, you know, sort of alleviating all the manual lugging back and forth.
So the Barry Sanders of robots juked James out of his shoes.
Oh,
and then went ridiculous. And got his job done, right? Without a sweat, without breaking a sweat.
Oh, yeah. And everybody thought, I asked, I was like, can I try to get run over by one of these? And I was like, you know, and yeah, no, it wins. The robots win. So
that's great. So that's the typical use for one of these robots, is it's doing work primarily that people don't want to do. They don't want to be picking up, bending over, picking up heavy stuff. They don't want to walk, you know, half a mile down to the other end of the warehouse and grab something off the shelf, especially if it's small, and then walk it all the way back. That's just not efficient use. And it's certainly not the type of work that most people would want to do. So I think when you add the fact that these robots, you know, aren't going to file a workers' comp claim.
Yes, right.
Right. You know, right. Are typically not going to be wore out at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know, are not going to complain about certain things, that I would argue that gives people more meaningful work to do, right?
Yes, exactly. And we've not seen, you know, I've heard secondhand, and then that one visit that I did where they had Locus, people liked it. Like the people there, like they of course they were nervous. I'd heard they were nervous before they came in, but they loved it because nobody lost their job. They just were able to do other things instead of like working double shifts or whatever. And like I said, more energy when they would go home. And I think it's a good thing overall. Like it's not we're not at the point where I think people should be sweating. At least in certainly in the warehouse space where people should be sweating, job replacement, things like that. Cause it's right now they're just looking at labor shortages and looking at where they can save a dime on heavy lifting type stuff. I think that's where it's at right now.
All excellent points. So when it comes to robots, you mentioned there's some apprehension, you know, at least in the immediate, but they've come to love these things. Did they nickname the robots or anything like that? They did? Okay.
Yep.
I figured I would.
I think there was a Larry Moe, Curly, and Shemp. And kudos. Yes. Everybody forget Shemp. Don't sleep on Shemp. He was good too. So robots had funny names. And a few of them drew little things on, you know, erasable because it's rented, you know, they're as a service. But I think people start to grow. They have personalities in their head. You know, humans project personalities onto them. Yeah,
yeah. I have a nickname for like all of my close friends. So if I was working with a robot every day, that robot would absolutely get a nickname.
What's the best nickname that you've given your friends? What's your favorite?
You know what? There's a couple of them that. Again, I don't know if they'd get mad at me for saying it.
Okay. That's I get that. I get that.
Yeah. So I'm not going to cross that boundary here.
Sure,
but if we hang out too much, James, you'll get a nickname from me, and then you'll know.
Oh, okay.
That's right. Yeah.
I look forward to being nickname worthy.
So I do want to explore this idea of the robot. So let's take the apprehension out of it because people are worried about the jobs, right? Let's talk about the real business aspects of having these robots in here. And I talked about maybe some of those soft costs because you don't know if somebody's going to have a claim like a workers' comp or something like that. But that's a real potential, especially for a company where you could have enough of those where you could measure it, like an Amazon fulfillment center or something like that, right? But let's talk about brass tacks. Like when we're talking about a robot that could probably, honestly, other than charging, work 24/7, right? And you know, not have to take breaks, not have to, take days off or ask for a vacation or things like that. Like, what's the real ROI to something like this? Just maybe that simple robot through Locus.
Well, I actually have some hard numbers from that too.
Okay.
From that one, the one site I visited, and they're kind of They do medical, as you mentioned, medical earlier. They're about small, medium, I would say, on the small side of medium size. And they saved $35,000 after, I think it was like 10 months, they had to pay off, right, the initial capital. They saved $35,000 a month, which for them is pretty sizable. And, you know, before the bots came in, they were able to pick, when we were talking about picking earlier, they were able to do 110 units per hour. Now they're up to above 400. And they reduced errors slightly. They were pretty good before, but they reduced errors by a few percentage points. So, I mean, that's, you know, definitely the hard ROI. But, you know, the other thing was just when they ramp up for the season, it's hard, especially in this era of shortages, to find people. They just buy more rope. They just get more robots for the picking. And, you know, so that alleviates that issue there of having to scramble and try to hire temporary workers who need to be, you know, trained. And, you know, it's not just like they can immediately come in and are experts on the operation. So there's definitely a lot of ROI in that as well, like just getting workers and being able to, hey, we're done with these.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it's pretty cool. Like if they, I was there, if they run low on battery, they just peel off and go to a charging station. And I was like, is there any maintenance? I was asking them if there's any kind of weird maintenance you got to worry about. No. And in fact, Locust, they have this like huge central computer area where they keep track. So if there's a problem, they know even before, they could potentially know even before the customer site does too. And I mean, I'm plugging Locust a lot, but I think there's probably other companies like that. They tend to be one of the, you know, they're friends of ours and they're one of the better ones at it. But that's kind of also where things are too with robots is more, instead of buying your own, it's more of like a, as a service subscription type thing.
Yeah.
But there's definitely clear ROI and there's no shortage of case studies. These companies have cranked out, showing the ROI.
Yeah. So I imagine when the battery's going down that it's like, it's almost like a WWF, like tag team, like it tags the other robot in, comes down from the top rope, you know what I'm saying?
And
like hits the rope and then, you know, does a suplex on the next guy.
I love that analogy, although I don't want to meet a heel robot. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Babyface robots.
Babyface. Yes. All right. So, going down the avenue, maybe not specifically on robots anymore, but in and around just, you know, warehouse management systems, I based on our previous conversations, there's a lot of opportunity for customization. It's almost a necessity because, you know, every warehouse is different. Every product is different.
Yep.
Every warehouse is certainly different, operationally, functionally. So let's talk about some of the specific things that you do in your current work in world to kind of meet those specific industry requirements around customization, et cetera.
A lot of the tier one WMSs, and Blue Yonder especially, they are trying to push people towards standard product for a variety of reasons. Sort of the main reason is if you do get a lot of customizations, sometimes it's hard when you get newer versions, right? So they are concerned, you know, about that. But still, if you're a big company, you got a lot of money, and you do have a real true edge case, right? Something unique that really needs to be customized in the WMS, they'll do it. And we do that. Like, that's one of the things Trion Solutions does is we, you know, implement, upgrade, do hot fixes, support, managed services, all of it for warehouse management systems. And we'll do the customization as well. We'll advise you, do you really need this? You know, we're not going to just, yeah, we'll do it. We'll say, look, there's certain, I think they also call them mods, modifications. There's other terms for it. But definitely if it really makes sense. I mean, if you're trying to like do a customization to support a scanner from 30 years ago, you know, it's probably a bad customization, but if it's a customization that saves money and that truly makes sense, you know, and you have to keep in mind maintainability, right, for future versions and support as well. So you have to just keep, we have a blog post about that on our, on Triumph Solutions website about, you know, modifications. Is it worth it? There's a whole blog post going through, you know, determining factors whether it makes sense. So
right.
That's a big question, actually. And you brought up that's a big question in warehouse management system space.
So how much of it out of the box with, say, a Blue Yonder or a similar system is going to do effectively what you want it to do? Or, because we talk a little about customization. Is there a need for your average to mid-size, you know, warehouse to need any sort of real modification?
I mean, the core stuff, receiving, put away, picking, packaging, all these things do tend to be very similar. And, you know, the big tier one WMSs have accounted for, you know, if they get a lot of feature requests from a lot of different big players, they're going to implement it. And so they do have things in there, of course, for like expiration dates, right? Things like that. They're going to account for a lot of things are accounted for already, you know, like kitting, like the idea of grouping items together and sort of packaging them. And so there's a lot of things already, I would say, taken into account. It's just everybody's got to sit down and talk about it. I think the warehouse manager, people on the floor, it's a team meeting with also your vendor, your supplier, the people, you know, that own the WMS and the people doing the WMS service. Mm-hmm. In Blue Yonder's case, they have people that do service, and then we also are a reseller and do services. And so we would sit down and have a big discussion and say, look, you know, is it worth it? And, so it is a big question.
Yeah. So let's kind of deviate from the customization question. Let's talk specifically around, like, obviously these systems are meant to, you know, either replace human intervention in areas where it's not efficient and or help businesses scale and grow efficiently. So what's happening right now that maybe wasn't happening a few months ago in your industry, in your space? And then what's available on kind of maybe the horizon, the near future in the space? We talked a little bit about robots, but what else have we not touched on?
Yeah. Well, I mean, even within, like, for example, picking, there's other technologies, voice picking, vision picking, which is interesting, where like everything, it's, you know, kind of looks cool. A little VR deal and go here. Oh, and it literally will overlay onto your warehouse where to take something, where to put something. It's pretty cool. In all honesty, the vision thing, you're probably good for about an hour before you get dizzy. Mm-hmm. But it's a good training tool. You could maybe use it, you know, on and off. I don't know if you could handle it, you know, 8 hours a day with it on. But so there's things like that. Also, scanners nowadays are way better than these. In the old school, you know, big giant chunk of beige plastic that looked ridiculous. Much like cell phones have improved, of course, scanners have improved. Now you can, everything's Android, like with Blue Yonder, everything's Android compatible. You could have it on a phone. And, you know, there's just a lot of flexibility with 2D barcodes. You got RF barcodes. So, you know, they're always adding things like this. I do think the big killer thing is what I was mentioned earlier is robots. I do think that is the next big thing, and working in conjunction and really in concert with your other systems, including especially WMS, which kind of sits at the core. But there are little stuff too. And, you know, I'm hearing about drones counting inventory, rumors, whispers. I haven't seen it myself, but that'll probably be a thing. It makes sense, right? You know, just have the drone just moves from aisle to, you know, move from aisle to aisle. And so these are some things that we're seeing. We're also seeing things moving to the cloud, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a big deal. Moving from on-premise to cloud. And there's big advantages to that. Obviously, you don't have to have the IT infrastructure and support, you know. New versions, like, instead of wrangling with it in-house, it's handled by the vendor, you know. So that's a big one, is the move to the cloud as well.
Yeah, I would think so. You know, I was talking to a friend used to work for Avaya, and Avaya is actually, you know, used to be a juggernaut in the phone system space. And apparently they just filed their second chapter 13, it's really backpedaling. Just not that their products are bad. It's just that a lot of people are, you know, not comfortable with it anymore. And you'd think a company like that, you know, who at one point was at the front of innovation, would continue to innovate. So I am curious, you know, and that's a big crazy example, but what is Trion Solutions specifically doing in the areas of innovating, and what are you doing specifically to stay ahead of your competitors in that arena of technology?
We have a few differentiators, I would say, amongst sort of our contemporary companies in our space. I could call them competitors. I'll say contemporary companies. That sounds nicer, right?
Doesn't sound like you're going to shoot him in the back.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. The CEOs / owners of each company might do that to each other. But right. One of the things that we do is we're all about reducing risk, right? In these implementations and upgrades, we don't want production downtime. You know, we don't want outages. And, you know, our CEO, he comes from a technical background and he's very serious about our technical and delivery side. And, you know, we had 30, last year was 39 go lives, 100% success. Not every company can say that. We always ensure, you know, that everything is successful and as defrick-free and smooth as possible. And one of the ways we do that, we're also known for test automation. We reduce risk in our implementations and upgrades by, instead of manual testing, you know, user paths to a system, we have test automation, like testing, like doing nightly testing, going through a WMS, receiving, put away, picking, all the way through and testing out just and finding, you know, sort of validating business processes along the way, but also just making sure there's no bugs, defects. And that way, when the implementation time comes and the actual real system and the real, you know, you've hopefully ironed out any potential issues. So we're known for test automation. In fact, these days work with one of our partners is Tricentis, and they have a product that we work with called Tosca. And, you know, we reduce risk in these implementations and upgrades and the professional work we do with WMSs via this product. And so that's the thing we're known for is test automation. Another thing, we have a lot of experienced folks in-house, you know, and they have some ways of to try to keep costs down, where especially if like one site is similar to another site, they have some sort of templatization techniques to sort of save on cost for like bringing a new site on a WMS, you know, online at a site. So I would say these are sort of big, you know, big differentiators that we have. We've been around since 2009. Mm-hmm. Our co-founders split off from Blue Yonder. They were working for Blue Yonder and they decided to go out on their own. And it's just been steadily growing since 2009.
So I'm curious, is there any sort of like compliance around what you do that has to be in consideration as you evaluate the implementation of a platform and or, you know, just different processes that you have to kind of run by any sort of agencies or entities that give a hoot?
So there's a lot of security, you know, concerns and generally speaking, the bigger the company that we work with, the bigger the more potential hurdles and stuff. And of course, a lot of that's important. I call it hurdles, but it is important. And there could be different compliance that's industry specific, right? Like, you know, food and beverage might have different ones from, they say, medical, you know, but I think just generally speaking, we haven't run into too many, you know, the most important thing I would say is, honestly, like when you go on site, and or you're dealing with this company, is everybody willing to change? You know, is there somebody sitting in the back, arms folded, with a shirt that says Joe Bob's WMS, you know, or whatever, it's the W or whatever they have in house. It's somebody that's just, they spent years working with, it's their job security. And, you know, like, are people willing, and they not just the top level, but everybody sees the benefit potentially in their job. And that's huge to me. Like, that's big, is the people. And that's why there's a whole thing, right? Change management. That more so than anything else, gotta be willing to spend a little money, you know, it's the other thing.
They're spending it either way, let's be honest, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
You're pissing it away if you're not, yeah, right?
You're burning it, right?
Yeah, you're burning it. Exactly. Right. Yeah. But yeah, we don't run into too many, at least yet, we haven't run into too many like regulation type stuff that have prevented us from doing business. It's just, it'd be people related if we have a hurdle usually.
Yeah, it's that's life, though, I think.
Yes.
So you're just dealing with normal life issues there at Trion Solutions.
Pretty much.
Normal people issues.
Yeah.
Well, James, I really enjoyed this conversation, man. You know, to geek out about robots, and I'm by no means an engineer or anything like that, but, you know, I have these visions of what, you know, life would look like the Jetsons. You know, the robot that's vacuuming your house is a real thing. I mean, that was something they predicted. Yeah. Can you get after the flying cars thing? I'm still waiting for that to happen. I know we have these drones, but that's not quite the same as what I envisioned, right? It's not, it's not Back to the Future.
Yeah. I mean, the flying cars, as long as human beings aren't flying them, I would be very concerned if human beings were in control of the cars. But if some type of benevolent AI, I'm going to say benevolent, is in charge of the flying cars, I'm good to go, you know? But, I mean, it sounds cool for sure.
I'm going to need you and your Lotus guys to get on that.
Yeah. I mean, I would trust them to do it. I think, you know, it's funny. People are always worried about like robots taking over. I watched a, thing on YouTube where these scientists told a robot to get on top of a table. Okay. Said use the least amount of energy as possible to get on top of the table. The robot went over to the table, crushed it, and then rolled on top. So I think that's the only real, because I'm not worried about some kind of like sci-fi. I'm actually worried about, we tell it to do something and it does it too well. Like, you know, environmental, go clean up this area and prevent pollution, and starts taking out human beings, you know, or something. Something like that, where it's an unintended consequence.
That's right. Yeah. You weren't specific enough.
Yeah, be very specific, you know. And we'll see how that all evolves with ChatGPT. And, you know, it's funny, AI was always this acronym marketing term people threw around. Was it really AI? And now with ChatGPT, you kind of see the beginnings of real AI.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah. Kind of having a mind of its own, per se. It's still pulling off of bank of information that is limited.
Yes.
So, you know, we're dealing with narrow AI at its best, but general AI, that's interesting. That's interesting. I mean, for these robots not even to have to, you know, maybe potentially ask anybody for direction. You know, they're just autonomous. They're just kind of doing the job like a human would, without the same barriers or limitations that humans have. Incredible stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. It's narrow. It's not 20 years from now. There might be some real deal stuff going on. It is learning. It's learning. Like, it's as good as whatever it takes in.
Yeah.
Still 100%. Impressive compared to what I've seen before, you know.
Yeah. I mean, just in the last couple of years, how many AI products have come out, you know, in and around, especially software specific ones, right? That, you know, may assist with X or Y, you know, some of the deep fake stuff that you're seeing and some of the videos that can be created with AI. It's some interesting stuff, right?
Yes. Scary, deep fake stuff, kind of scary, kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully there'll be some kind of little, about a watermark or some kind of, some way to determine, you know what I mean? Like, who knows? They take this and take our little talk here and turn it into something crazy. And so,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, it's not even about robots anymore. It's about chickens. I mean, who knows?
Yes,
right?
Chickens.
What do chickens have to do with warehouse management? Like, seriously,
spatulas, whoopee cushions. They could, any random,
handlebar mustache. I don't
know.
I don't know.
But I'd watch that. I'd watch a podcast.
Yeah, you know, just put one of those on both of us so we just can own it. Like, yeah, right? Yeah. Well, where can people find you or connect with you, chat with you, follow you, or even hire a robot? Like, how would they make that happen, James?
Sure. Tryonsolutions.com. We're on LinkedIn. You know, you could come check us out on LinkedIn, and we'll hook you up with you could go check out Locust directly. You could work with us to get to work with Locust as well. But I would say, you know, on Tryon Solutions, we have a really nice blog. We're careful. It's not filled with a lot of fluff. They drop once a month. There's no paywalls. There's no subscribe. There's no weird pop-ups with like one weird trick for your WMS and stuff like that. You know, like it's just really good, legit information. So I highly recommend, if you're interested in supply chain, you're interested in warehouses, do check out our blog on the website for sure. And yeah, connect with us on LinkedIn too.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks for listening to the What the Tech podcast. For more informative information in and around how technology is changing the way that we work and live, make sure you hit that like button and subscribe button so you never miss another episode. And thanks, James, for coming on and chatting with me about robots, my man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was great. Thank you.